Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 2nd of October. Glad you're listening as we start our day together talking about news items and special interest topics with guests from around our country with a real faith and a genuine hope. And we thought here on this Tuesday morning we would mix things up a little bit here in the opening segment and invited our good friend of the program, Nicole Phillips, on, who talks regularly about kindness and how important kindness is in our world. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing well. I understand you're coming live from Fargo at this point.
I am. I'm doing a little speaking in Fargo for 10 days, and so I'm hanging out with old friends in Fargo. It's awesome.
Well, I love it, and thanks for taking a couple minutes here this morning. I know last time, Nicole, you were on the air with us that we ran through about 13 boxes of tissue in studio as you shared a story about kindness. It was the talk of our dinner table that night, too, and we thought, what a fun way to just kick off a Tuesday morning like this as we think about the rest of our week, and you can inspire us with yet another story about kindness. What do you have for us this morning?
Well, I was looking through the book that I just released. It's called Kindness is Courageous. And one of the stories in there talks about a couple from Minnesota and how they were eating at a restaurant. And he is a veteran. They've been married for 67 years. And they were just delighted when someone paid for their bill at a Perkins restaurant in Minnesota. So yesterday I was sitting at a restaurant in Fargo, and I asked the waitress, I said, do you see this sort of thing often? And she just lit up and got this delighted expression on her face. And she said, yes. And she said, you know, normally it will be with someone who is wearing a veteran's cap or something. And she said, the person at the booth next to them will secretly pay for their bill. And she said, it always kind of refreshes my faith in humanity. She said, because it's not just paying for a coffee for someone, which is great. She said, these people are paying for a full meal. And a lot of times, they'll throw in a piece of pie. And so that sort of love really delights her. But she said, you know, something really struck us the other day. She said, one of our servers lost her dad. Oh. And it was a really tough time. And, you know, she was off for a bit. And when she came back, she met with her regulars. You know, she had a table of two people, a husband and wife, who were her regulars. And they had asked her what was going on and just talked with her. And then they gave her a check to cover the time that she was off work. And the whole wait staff was just so floored by that, because they said, you know, we think of these people that we see every day as family. But when they extend something like that, and we know that what we do, the little thing we do here by serving them in the mornings, matters, it just blows us away.
Oh, that's such an incredible story of just sort of the common humanity that we share. And if we just take a second, these little things that we can do with one another, I've got to believe it just makes somebody's week, if not month, and really does restore our faith in just God and one another.
Absolutely. And if you ever are like the conversation's going too negative with the people that you're with, I highly suggest that you just throw out that question. Tell me about an act of kindness you've seen or an act of kindness. Because it really changes things. Sometimes it takes people a minute to think of it, but once they do, then the whole conversation really becomes fun and positive, and that's what I saw with the servers.
Well, and I think too, Nicole, what a fun way for our listeners this morning as they're maybe going, getting their coffee this morning, going through the drive-through, to perhaps even just pay for the cup of coffee for the person behind them with a little note. What a fun and interesting way our listeners can participate in this.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it doesn't have to be like a $10,000 gift. It can be a quick little, hey, I see you there and I just want to make your day brighter.
Well, thanks for joining us with a quick story on kindness like that, Nicole. We love your work. You got listeners, you can go to NicoleJPhillips.com and see Nicole's work. You can see some of the books, too, that are wonderful books and stories that you can use as family. So, again, enjoy your time up in Fargo, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Pete. Have a great day.
Me too. We'll take a break, and when we come back on Faith Radio Mornings, we're looking out for Dr. Ann Bradley, see if we can find her. I know she's not picking up yet in the moment, but we want to have some conversations about economics and capitalism in our country with Ann Bradley. So we'll hunt her down here during the break on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we have been trying to track down Dr. Ann Bradley of the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. She was going to join me this morning and talk a little bit about some of the free trade agreement and how we can understand capitalism in our country. We haven't been able to find Ann, but that gives us the good news that Nicole Phillips can continue to demonstrate her kindness, her other-centeredness, her Christ-likeness in Fargo, Minnesota, or Fargo, North Dakota. It's not in Minnesota. But well, thanks for staying on the line with us for a little bit. I'd be curious, you know, as you how do you stay in this place of kindness and thinking about other people if you even just watch the news for an hour, Nicole, and just pick up on how difficult things are in our country? Bruce Ashford was on last hour with us and talking about we as believers need to be anchored in a different place to really be able to shine light in this world. So what do you do and what would you suggest for our listeners to just retain that sense of kindness as we watch the events unfold?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's multiple things. And the first is to remember there's always helpers. There's always people in the background that you're not seeing who are loving and helping in behind the scenes. So that would be one thing. But the two things I really try to do is, number one, keep an eternal perspective. And that to me is essential, because when we believe that we are really in control, we get terrified, because there's no way we can be in control, right? I mean, that would be horrible. And then the second thing is to remember that seeing people far away doesn't help us love them. When we see them up close, we can love them better. Like, do you understand that, Peter?
I think I do. You know, I think I do to some extent, Nicole. It's so important, isn't it? I mean, that piece of it. I keep chatting away just about how we can do some of that on a practical basis, because I know for me, I get lost in the events of my day. I know I talk with so many parents that are so busy running from thing to thing to thing, including myself, that to practice those kinds of things is not easy.
No, and we can get caught up in it in the TV. When we see somebody so often on our TV, we feel like we know them, so we make judgments about them. And it can happen in social media as well. We are only seeing what someone is posting, what someone is allowing us to see. And so we're not actually seeing them as a person. After a while, we start seeing them just, you know, as an entity. So I really feel like when we can ask questions, when we have those people in front of us, and not necessarily those people you see on TV, but when we have a person in front of us and are having a conversation, when we can take it deep, when we can go personal, when we can say, you know, what really makes you tick? Like, why? You know, why do you like that? Why do you believe this? I think that brings the humanity back to people, and it allows us to see people for not just a facade, but for really how they were raised and how they were created. And that allows us to build compassion, and compassion is the big key for keeping kindness alive all day long in your life.
I'd be curious what you suggest in terms of even going on social media, specifically Twitter. I know to the extent that I will go on Twitter, Nicole, I don't see a lot of healthy conversation going back and forth. It seems to sort of descend into trolling one another. Is this a helpful place of engagement socially, or does it take away from our ability to be kind?
Yeah, I think it depends on what you are following on Twitter, what sort of feeds you're getting. I get a Mr. Rogers feed on Twitter, so every time I open Twitter, I get this great Mr. Rogers quote. And so for me, that's a great, fun place to be. And I don't get a lot of the trolling, because I'm just not following those people. I'm just not subscribed to that, so I'm not tuned into that. I subscribe to things that are really happy. And that's really essential, because kindness works as a trifecta. So the giver of the kindness, the receiver of the kindness, and the witness of the kindness all get these great feel-good chemicals flowing through our body. And we get to be the witness of an act of kindness when we read about it, when we hear a story about it, and can even mediate our Twitter feeds through our Facebook. And so to me, you know, I don't like to engage in political conversations or things like that unless I'm working for a change. If I am trying to truly understand something or advocate for a change, then I want to be engaged. But otherwise, if we're just kind of commiserating together or gossiping together, you know, then I don't feel the need to engage in those sorts of negative conversations.
Well, I think that's incredibly helpful for our listeners, and I know for me, to just be thinking about kindness that way. Well, Nicole, thanks for sticking around a little longer with us on Faith Radio Mornings. What are you talking about up in Fargo as part of sort of this talks that you're giving?
You know, it's interesting because one of the major things I focus on this time around is perspective. And it really is being, are you the person who goes into the birthday party and sees everything that went right? Or are you the person who goes into the birthday party and says, this cake is dry? And, you know, we do that in little ways and big ways throughout our day. And so if we can get a hold of our thoughts and our perspective, then we can just crack open this great life of kindness.
Well, have a great time in Fargo, Nicole, and look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Thanks so much, Peter. See you then.
We'll take a break here on Faith Radio Mornings, and I see that we have found Ann Bradley, and looking forward to a conversation with her about some of the free trade agreements that happened in our country this week. So more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined in the line by Dr. Ann Bradley, who's the Vice President of Economic Initiatives at the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's great to hear your voice again. It's been a bit, but it'll be fun to catch up this morning. I know you've been busy and we're in your neck of the woods where you're releasing books and making commentary on some of what's happening in our country economically.
That's right. There's a lot to talk about, isn't there?
Well, there sure is. I know that one of the headlines that came out here in the last 24 hours is that after some 11th-hour brinksmanship, it sounds like we have a new free trade agreement with Mexico and Canada. Kind of talk us through some of the differences that we can expect moving forward compared to the past treaty.
Sure. I think, you know, this has been one of Trump's siren calls in his platform as he was campaigning to be president. And of course, he has been following through with that. And as we all know, this past year has been a lot of ups and downs in terms of trade wars and kind of bickering over trade policy with parts of Europe and Canada and Mexico. And so, you know, what we're seeing right now is that we have sort of renegotiated NAFTA. From what I can tell right now, it hasn't destroyed what's been good about NAFTA, but I don't think it's a total victory either. A lot of the taxes and the quotas remain. It wasn't the wrecking ball that Trump originally had kind of had in mind. And I think including Canada at the last minute really is important, not just diplomatically, but Canada is an enormous trading partner for United States citizens and for Canadian citizens. And we have to keep in mind, those are the people that we should be worried about. We're worried about access to goods and services that ordinary people have or don't have. And we're also worried about the ability of people to open businesses and engage in business dealings as they see fit. And this would include farmers and stores and manufacturers and all those different types of industries. And so I think we have to keep our eye on the prize, and that's the prize, which is how do ordinary people fare under this type of deal? So I think this is kind of a preservation of the status quo, maybe a little bit worse in terms of my mind as an economist. I'd like to see some of those quotas and provisions go away. The other thing that we're seeing is, just to give an example, U.S. cars or cars as they're manufactured, as you know, and as we can all think about, a car, even if it's, you know, a Ford, isn't just solely made in America. I mean, the car is made up of hundreds of thousands of hands touch that car and pieces and materials that come from all over the world. And so part of the requirements are that more of those materials have to be made in the United States and manufactured in the United States before the car can kind of have that, can escape some of the taxes and penalties. So I think those things sound good on paper. I'm not sure they're good for car prices and for, you know, just having better, faster, cheaper automobiles, which, again, that's what we care about for ordinary people. So there's some complexities. I think we're going to see how this falls out in the next few days and what the market's response to it is, of course. We always want to watch that. But I don't think it's devastating.
I guess that's my summary point.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that the president has been pretty active in trying to undo a lot of the business regulations and promote free trade to the extent possible, even across the border. And that's part of, as you've been addressing in this recently released book, Counting the Cost, Christian Perspectives on Capitalism, you've edited a book where people address different kinds of critiques of capitalism, you know, like, does it hurt the poor? Does it promote materialism? Does it harm the environment? And there's a lot of conversation going on in our country right now, and in fact, attacks of capitalism from more of a democratic socialist platform. So, Anne, before getting into a couple of the perspectives from the book, I would love your take on the attack that is in the critique of capitalism, because when we look at the history of economic theory, socialism hasn't really had a lot of staying power, and it's brought a lot of harm to most countries, whereas capitalism has created some wealth. But give our listeners a sense, is there a legitimate critique of capitalism from the socialist side?
I always think there's a legitimate critique, because here's what we have to keep in mind. This is people. I mean, every institution, whether it's the market, the church, the nonprofit, the government, the economy, they are made up of people, and people have fallen and broken. And so there's going to be mistakes and errors and greed and corruption no matter where you look. And I think if you look across all the kind of scandals that we've looked at over this year, every institution gets marked by the fall, right, by human failings. And so we need to keep that in mind. And I would say that capitalism is just a system that seems historically to have provided the best workaround to our failings. And there's a couple of reasons for that. It has a built-in mechanism for discovering new ways of doing things and correcting mistakes. So that's the key, right? I mean, if we're all human beings, and we're all going to make different types of mistakes, we need to live in a system where those mistakes are transparent, easily discoverable, and where people are held accountable for them. So our critiques that Christians bring, and that's what our book is about, that Christians are bringing to capitalism, I think they're real. Does it call us to be more materialistic? Do we just want to consume things? Do we stop loving our neighbor? I mean, those are questions that real, earnest Christians have, and we try to tackle them in the book in an earnest way, not just to be apologists for capitalism, but to say, okay, given the fact that we're broken and we're sinful, what's the system that is going to best help us look at the, you know, kind of keep our eyes on the prize, which is human flourishing, and helping to lift people out of poverty, because we certainly know we have a biblical mandate to do that. Now, the socialist critique, as you're asking, you know, what's the socialist critique on capitalism? I think it's, you know, the rich get richer at the expense of the poor, and the rich don't start to be disconnected from the poor. They don't care about them. They don't maybe even see them anymore. So they kind of become removed, and you get a classist type of society. I think that those concerns, I wouldn't dismiss them out of hand if I was having a conversation with somebody like, you know, Bernie Sanders. But I would take them and say, okay, but what are the alternatives? See, that's what the economist always asks, is in an imperfect world, we have to look at what the alternative mechanisms are for kind of overcoming these problems that we face as humans. And socialism, as you mentioned in your question, has a disastrous and immiserating track record. Immiserating is the right word here. I mean, look at what's going on in Venezuela today. And I think the Sanders retort or the Cortez's retort to this would be, well, we want democratic socialism, because what we're going to do in that environment is, yes, you have some government ownership of economic resources and economic decision making, but you have a democracy. And so if people start to become Maduro-ish, right, or Stalin-ish, then you have a democratic system of checks and balances and decentralized government that weeds out the corruption. This has never worked. And if you look at what the socialists promise, they always promise a kind of utopian vision of where we're going to, you know, kind of all love each other and share things, and there's going to be no power structure. So the socialists just can't deliver what they're saying they can deliver. And it's not because they're bad or evil people necessarily. It's because the system doesn't work. It's not grounded in the right thinking about human anthropology. And so that's why I always say good economics has to start with human anthropology. What are humans capable of? What are our constraints? And from there,
and what are our biblical responsibilities, of course. And from there, we say, okay, then what type of system best fits that? So I'm hesitant to say, you know, capitalism is this nirvana. It's not for people, but it's the best we've got, and it is the world's most productive anti-poverty program ever. So I think that, you know, three cheers for capitalism as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I love the book, Anne. We're a little short on time, unfortunately, this morning, but I would love to have you back on shortly and talk through some of the critiques in the book of capitalism, because I think what you're offering in this book, Counting the Cost, is the idea that we can have some critique, but we can look to reform as opposed to just throw out. And it's so polarized in our society. We just want to throw things out as opposed to say, hey, things can get better legitimately. And so let's have that conversation. So thanks for joining me this morning on Faith Radio Mornings, and we'd love to have you back soon.
Thanks, Peter. Have a great day.
You too. We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Joanne Pittman, who will give us some ground-level look at the persecution that's going on China right now. And so much more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, there always seems to be a bit of news that I find hard to believe here on Faith Radio Mornings, but I see there's a headline out of New York that says there's a new pumpkin record out of New York. Carl Hayes broke the state record for growing a pumpkin that tipped the scales at, get this, 2,027 pounds. It's over a ton. I find that hard to believe. I'd like to see a picture of that pumpkin, and maybe if you celebrate Halloween at all this year, you could have them ship a one-ton pumpkin for you. I don't think you could get that done through Amazon Prime, however. Well, we've got Joanne Pittman on the line coming up next on from ChinaSource.org. And if you listen to Faith Radio Mornings regularly, you know that we talk a lot about what's going on in the persecution in China, because what we see there may begin to extend out to other countries and has, in fact, done that. And Joanne gives us a ground-level view of the persecution in China. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined by Dr. Linda Mintel, and she was talking us through how we as believers can be calm in the storms of life, how we can be at peace in the face of adversity.
One of the key factors psychologically with people is that if you feel like your life is at the expense of things that are external to you, we call that an external locus of control. If you think that things around you have to go right, or people have to respond the right way, or you have to have the right situations in order to be okay in life, if you have that kind of belief, you're going to be very anxious and actually fearful moving through life. So one of the things that you have to learn to develop is some type of internal locus of control. And this has everything to do with when people feel anxious and when they feel depressed. Even people who go through chronic pain, if their belief is that they have to have a surgeon or a doctor or somebody else taking care of them, or they can't be okay. Now, I'm not dissing all of those things, because those things are important. But the idea that somehow you have to develop an internal locus of control.
That was Dr. Linda Mintel, who joined me yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings. And she just has some great tips for, as we're dealing with anxiety and the storms of life, how we can walk through those things and be a person of peace, even if our circumstances don't actually change. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com and hear all of what Linda had to say. Well, I see that Joanne Pittman is on the line, and she's going to join the program next to talk about, from a ground level perspective, the kinds of persecution that's happening in China right now and the implications that may have for us who are believers moving forward in our world. So it'd be a great segment with Joanne Pittman next on Faith Radio Mornings.
After years of working with kids, I've discovered that teens want their parents to know something that seems very confusing. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. It's true. Your definition of abnormal is your teen's definition of normal. Are you confused by teen culture? You're not alone. Society has changed and it's consistently morphing, and teen behavior has evolved along with it. Teens wish their parents knew that they need space to be abnormal. Living in this culture may look different than we want. It's important that we teach our teens what's right and wrong, but we also need to allow our teens to express their own unique style. So mom and dad, trust your teens to use the tools you've given to make godly decisions, even in an abnormal setting.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
It's about 18 minutes before the top of the hour. And if you listen to Faith Radio Mornings regularly, you know that we have guests coming on talking about news out of China, whether it's Dr. David Aikman on Mondays or Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, who joins me regularly on Tuesdays as well. And they give us some of the news coming out of China. But I really wanted to find somebody who would have more of a ground level perspective on what life is like happening now in China and the persecution. So we reached out to Joanne Pittman of ChinaSource.org to give us a little perspective on that. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
So I would love for you to just let our listeners know a little bit about your organization and what you do generally, and then we can talk more specifically about some of the things that are happening with the persecution right now.
Certainly, and thank you for having me on. I work with ChinaSource, and ChinaSource is a small resource ministry, and we provide the global Christian community with timely and objective information about issues facing the church. We also are a platform for Chinese Christians and the church in China to participate in the global community. And our most visible platform is our website, which you mentioned a minute ago, chinasource.org, where we provide a window into Christianity. And we have writers who are on the ground in China, both foreign and Chinese.
Well, and Joanne, I know for me, having just sort of walked through seminary and some of that education, that persecution was always talked about relative to early Christians in the Roman Empire, but we don't talk about it a lot as believers in America because it just really isn't happening that much of the time, and it certainly is not extreme. But give us a sense of what life would be like for the average believer in China.
Well, for the average believer in China, to be honest with you, persecution is not the normal experience. Persecution events, while they are increasing over the last couple of years with the tightening, the Chinese government is actually trying to rein in a lot of segments of Chinese society and reestablish it. The Communist Party is trying to reestablish its control over all aspects of Chinese society, and that includes religion. But I would say, you know, you're talking about 50 to 70 million Christians. And even though the number of reported persecution incidents or harassment incidents, for the average believer in China, persecution is still not the normal experience.
Well, and to that extent, to whatever extent it's on the increase, my understanding is that China was starting to move in a direction where it was getting more free and more open, and certainly the next generation had more access to global ideas and global thought because of the internet and because it was a little bit lax. But with the new president, there does seem to be a movement away from that towards Chinese nationalism again.
Yes, that is definitely true. What we've been seeing for the last... Oh, I would say the last 20, maybe 15, 20 years was a gradual expansion of the space within which religious life was allowed to function and even flourish within Chinese society. And so we saw Christian publishing, we saw Christian schools being opened, we saw the explosion of the urban house church movement in the cities in China. And you're right, there did seem to be you could kind of do anything. And when the current president came to power in 2012, he looked around and he saw a Communist Party that really had lost its grip over many segments of society. And so he's starting to reassert that control. And so after many years of seeing this expansion of space, what we are seeing now is a contraction of the space and a lot more restrictions being put in on religious life in China, not just for Christians, but also all religions in general.
Well, is this part of the ebb and flow of what's happening in Chinese culture? You know, maybe the last 100 years or so, we see that there gets to be some openness, but then there's a crackdown, and maybe the government of power is feeling threatened. And so there's a sense in which people need to sing the Chinese national songs again and maybe ban some of the crosses from being publicly displayed. What is sort of the momentum right now relative to this situation?
Well, the momentum right now is definitely towards less freedom, more restrictions, resurgent nationalism. As I mentioned, the party wanting to reestablish its control, and that includes ideological control, wanting to, you know, be more influential in the lives of people and in the beliefs of people. And yes, it is a part of China's sort of the political winds blow one way for a while, and then they turn and blow another way for a while. And I think, you know, many of us who have been involved with China, I've been involved with China for the last 30 years, the winds have really been blowing one way, which was towards more openness, and now they've turned and shifted and gone the other way. But it is part of a, you know, thousands of years of cycle of Chinese governance.
That's Joanne Pittman of Chinasource.org. We're going to take a short break, Joanne, and when we come back, I would love to get your perspective on just faith in the midst of persecution versus when faith can be pretty open, because at least from the events of history, people who are being persecuted, they tend to shine a light a bit more brightly. And so how do we understand the importance of freedom to express our faith, but also what persecution can do relative to the future of the kingdom? So more to come with Joanne Pittman on Faith Radio Mornings. It's just about 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined in the line by Joanne Pittman of Chinasource.org, who's given us some ground-level information and just a take on what life might be like in China. And sometimes it's never as bad as the headlines portray it to be in the persecution there. But, Joanne, I'd be curious your thoughts on just persecution in general. I know when we look back in history, obviously early believers in the Roman Empire had a terrible time and were obviously and often being killed for their faith. But if you look at what happened as a result of that, Christianity grew and spread and really shined a different kind of light. And I know we want to advocate for freedom of religion and freedom of faith, but sometimes the flip happens where then we become more of a secular society when that happens. So how are you processing this at China Source about we want to end persecution, and yet we see throughout history that persecution sometimes shines a really bright light in our world?
Well, I think for China, it's important to look at what happened with the church in China after the communists came to power in 1949. When the communists came to power, there were probably estimates of around 700,000 Protestant Christians in China after 150 years of missionary activity. And then the communists came to power, and there was relative freedom at first, but gradually they moved to a point of wanting to rid Chinese society of religion, and so a period of intense persecution came that lasted really from the mid-50s until the late 1970s, and China began to open and they began to allow a little bit more religious freedom. But in that first period from 1949 to 79, the Chinese church grew from 700,000 to approximately 10 million during a time of intense persecution. And then from 1979 until now, the numbers are up at 50 to 70 million. So if you look at China, particularly in that 30 years of the persecution era, that's really when the church in China exploded. So the Chinese church has historically known suffering, and I think Chinese believers understand that suffering and persecution has been an important factor in the spread and the growth of the church in China. And so I think the younger Christians in the cities who didn't experience the persecution era are now beginning to say, okay, what is it going to be like for our generation? But also knowing that their parents' generation, the generation of the 50s and 60s, experienced persecution, but that was also the time of massive growth of the church in China.
It is a fascinating dynamic that throughout history, the church tends to grow during persecution and tends to fade during times of freedom. And I think watching what's happening in China is instructive for us. And I'd be curious, Joanne, as you watch how the Chinese Christians practice their faith, how is it maybe different than the average American believer who gets up on a Sunday morning and heads off to a building called a church with a sign and maybe a steeple? Is it different the way people are gathering and practicing their faith in China?
In some ways it's different, in some ways it's similar. I mean, China has official churches that are open. I mean, if you go to every city in China, you're going to find churches that are open. They're government-run churches. We call them three-self churches. And in some of those churches, the gospel is preached week in and week out. In some of the churches, the gospel is not preached. It's sort of a watered-down gospel. So those believers who are in the official church, it would look fairly similar. They're going to church on Sunday morning, and there might be a small group fellowship that you're a part of. But the larger numbers in China are Christians who are part of the house church movement, both in the countryside and in the city. And in that case, many times there isn't a building involved. A lot of times there are small, you know, groups of maybe 20 to 50 gathered in somebody's home. They tend to be very, very close-knit, very tight, and there's a lot of fellowship and a lot of community that's built into it. In some cases, these house churches, especially in the urban areas, are large enough. They have 200, 300, 400 people, and they rent space in an office building. And so they have, you know, they have a worship center and offices and Sunday school rooms and all of that. Even though they're technically illegal, they're able to do that. So, you know, I think for the house church, the biggest difference would be it's smaller groups and it's more community based.
Well, and of course, China's a big place, so I would assume that it's practiced in different ways in different locations, too. And, Joanne, before
right.
we run, I'd be curious, how can we as believers in the United States, how can we help specifically with the efforts in the midst of persecution in China? Does ChinaSource.org have places and ways in which we can help?
We don't actually have the places like that. We're not an advocacy organization. What I would say is if you want to have a a more in-depth look at what the issues are that are facing the church in China, I would say really, you know, spend some time looking around on our site, because actually most Chinese Christians are the issues forefront in their mind are, you know, how do I have good marriages? How do I parent my kids? How do I, you know, live out my faith in the community? They're worrying more about those things than they are the government. But I think the number one thing is to pray, because As I mentioned, particularly in the cities, this new generation of urban Christians who've only been Christians for 10 or 15 years, they don't have the experience of the persecution era. And, you know, and they're going to be facing some difficulties in the coming years for sure. So I think praying for our brothers and sisters in China.
Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on to Faith Radio Mornings, Joanne, and just talking us through a little bit about what life would be like for the average believer in China. Just sort of cut through some of the headlines and really give us a ground level take. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break and wrap up our show for the morning here on the 2nd of October on Faith Radio Mornings. I was struck by Joanne's comments about how our Chinese brothers and sisters in faith maybe are familiar with suffering, and it's part of how they even understand their journey of following Jesus. I know when I was studying a bit of Asian Christian theology when I was overseas in Scotland, that it really impacted me to read Asian Christian theologians who really talked a lot about suffering and even the necessity of suffering in our faith and the biblical call to it, and how it transforms us and really shines a light in the world, and how different that really can be at times from Western Christian theologians who emphasize the kingship of Jesus and the lordship of Jesus, sort of ruling over in this kingdom that knows no end. And both sides are right, but I just find it interesting that depending on where we live, how our faith really is shaped and how our perspective of the kingdom really is shaped by those things. So wonderful to have a ground level look from Joanne Pittman from China about how the faith is being practiced. And sure, appreciated all the conversations this morning in terms of Bruce Ashford coming on and talking about getting involved in politics, and of course Tommy Binion out of the Heritage Foundation and Ann Bradley. So thanks to all the guests, and thanks to all to you as listeners. We'll keep walking out this journey together, not as Democrats and Republicans, but as citizens of the kingdom, and fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.